Today is the 30th of January 2018, and we are sitting here at the Haus der Kulturen der Welt, and we are preparing for the opening of Transmediale. And next to me is a person who has got the right, the honor, and the pleasure to have all room for herself. And she is going to present herself first.
Hi, I'm Heather Dewey-Hackbark.
Heather, you told us in the press conferences that you started very early collecting all kind of weird things in the roads of New York. What did you collect and why?
So I started collecting cigarette butts and chewed up gum, hair and bits of people's fingernails from the streets and trains and bathrooms and waiting rooms all around New York City. And really it was because I became totally preoccupied with this question of how much I could learn about a stranger from a hair or from some little bit of themselves that they'd accidentally left behind without noticing, without thinking about it. And it drove me to pursue answering that question in whatever way I could.
But even without being indiscreet, what made you up to do this? People still would have a very strange idea on this kind of work, which actually has been transformed into artwork recently.
I guess I've been working with art and technology and art and science for as long as I could remember, really. I mean, since I was in college, I was doing these kind of weird exploratory projects that probably most people wouldn't even consider art, that would be exploring machine learning algorithms and looking into the evolution of language and kind of philosophical questions around technology. And then I would see the art as kind of the setting up of an experiment to explore some kind of research question in relation to that. So when I was in college, this first really major installation I worked on was called NetLingua, and that was about creating this kind of a network of autonomous agents that could sense the world and create these words to represent what they were feeling and then share those words and kind of grow a language from that. And so I was interested in this idea of creating systems that would explore these questions. And so Stranger Visions was a kind of continuation of that general research approach of setting up a system that would explore a kind of question and then seeing what kind of artifacts it would produce and then exhibiting the artifacts of that production, which in that case ended up, after playing around with different modes of representation and different ways of characterizing DNA data, as these 3D printed portraits.
It's a long way and a very confusing and interesting story at the same time. Who did support you at this early days?
Not many, I have to say. So when I started on Stranger Visions, I was very lucky to get a residency at IBM. And so that was kind of one of the first things I think that helped me start really pulling a kind of artistic career, if you want to call it that, out of these projects that I was working on. So I'd been working on projects, I don't know, for 10 years or something. Would show them from time to time, probably in more DIY contexts and art spaces and things. And then I got a residency at IBM, and that came with a small amount of money and then also a connection to this community of people who were also working in a politically engaged way with art and technology. Yeah, that was kind of like this push, I think, that I really had been needing to start advancing the kind of work I was doing further, and also provided this kind of critical feedback about how other people were seeing it. I mean, that's the funny thing. You can make these projects and never think at all about what other people see in them. And then that kind of shifted for me in that moment where I realized, actually, it's really important what people are taking away from this. It's not just about what's in my head. It has to also be about the viewer's experience of the work. And so that began me on this kind of quest to get this piece, what you see as this real face-to-face encounter.
And on this piece, still something strange, at least in my view, you took just one DNA, you wrote your own software, and suddenly so many different personalities appeared from that. So in a way, the projection which was put into you is turning around with you to us.
Yeah, exactly. So over the kind of 5 years that I was working on this work, so beginning in 2012 with Stranger Visions, and then moving through in 2015, the first two portraits of Chelsea Manning, If Radical Love, and then in 2017, now these 30 portraits of her from the same DNA. What it's really about is this self-reflexive turn in the work itself. And so moving from my initial interest, which really was about showing this vulnerability of the body, that we would be shedding these physical traces and not thinking about it, trying to move the conversation. I mean, this was still pre-Snowden, but nonetheless, move the conversation away from thinking about electronic data surveillance and towards thinking about this kind of forgotten, messy physical self. And that's where it began. And then as I worked in and through that, I became increasingly concerned about the tools themselves. And then what you see now is really this effort to show how limited the tool is and really how many different things the same tool can say based on the same data.
And what I saw in your work, as far as it is represented right now, because it's still a dry rehearsal, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I saw is that you're going beyond digital with this kind of thing.
Beyond digital in which sense?
Because you look for the future which is representing ourselves as human beings in the world which seems to be determined by digital bits and bytes.
Yeah, what I've become most interested in the last year or so, I would say, is really thinking about how these technologies, be they digital or not, that we have now and that are changing and growing with us in the years to come, how these are changing our personal relationships and our concepts of self-identity. And so that's what I'm hoping to do, even more so, I would say, with the next project that I'm working on that will be premiering in May at MU Art Space in Eindhoven, which is really this kind of post-genomic love story, which looks at a biohacker that becomes obsessed with an anonymous saliva donor. And so that's really where my interest is right now, is in thinking about these very intimate and personal things. And thinking, for example, about what an intimate process it was working with Chelsea's DNA and what it means to know someone first and before you ever exchange a message with them, to suddenly have this incredibly personal information and be kind of combing over it and learning all of these things about them, all these kind of probabilities of who and what they are before you've ever met them, before you've ever really heard a word from them.
So people transferred into data, and now data transform or recode or redefine themselves as person in real. This is a big, big challenge. Do you think that this challenge is received in Europe differently than in the US?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, definitely Europe is more interested in the protection of privacy, for example, with the data protection initiative. And so that's, I think, a really interesting question of where those protections will go and what is going to be possible. I think, I mean, there's really only so much we can do to maintain privacy. And it's not to say that I don't think it's a worthy effort, of course. But I think when you look at genomic privacy in particular, you see that there's really a limit to what you can ever do. I mean, you can't control that you're going to leave traces of skin on a coffee mug, you know, that you've just touched, that someone could collect that and could start creating these kinds of interpretations or eventually even clone you, you know. I mean, it sounds far-fetched and it sounds like science fiction, but it's really not actually that far off. And it's a kind of hard edge of privacy because there's no anonymity when it comes to DNA. It really just doesn't exist. You can always re-identify. And many scientific studies have shown really how easy it is to re-identify people from DNA that's supposedly anonymous. And so it points, I think, to this kind of hard limit of what privacy will be and asks us to think about how to grapple with that, I hope, in a good way, in a way that's kind of generous with each other and allows us to move past categorization and past this kind of inscribing of identity and move towards something else. I can't say yet what that could be, but I think it's really important. And if we think about even what we see happening now with blockchain technology and this idea of a kind of self-sovereign identity and a kind of immutable identity, that we're going to see the same things happening on this digital side as well. And so we really need to be vigilant and be actively thinking about how we can be these kind of self-determined identities still in a time where an immutable identity can be imposed on us from outside.
With this statement, we are opening up a totally new horizon. And to discover that, we just invite the people to come to see your presentation, your show, your ideas, your imagination of something becoming real again. So instead of asking any other question, I would ask you the following. Is there any question I haven't asked, but I should have?
No, I don't think so. I think asking in the first place about really what the personal impulse is towards the work is actually the most important question, and so often the one that's overlooked.
I appreciate your comments and wish you really a good reception of your work here in Berlin.
Thank you.